Are you gay?
Geeky?
Just enjoy hearing your good Judy's dish about the latest in pop culture?
Well, then you're in luck.
The boys of Flame On are here for you.
In every episode, we discuss the topics that entrance us.
Whether it's comics, TV,
movies,
drag queens,
or video games,
we've got you covered.
So, if you're ready for your gay and geeky slice of pop culture life,
then sit back and get ready to
Flame On!
What's going on, everybody? Pat DeBear here, and we are back again. This time not with our monthly pop culture roundup, but a special microsode. It's been a little while since we've done a microsode. I don't remember when the last one was. I was about to be like, oh, it was when we did this. Probably a movie. Was it Daredevil? I don't think we did Doctor Who. Maybe Daredevil.
Was it Wicked? Was it the second Wicked movie?
We did that one. Yeah. Trying to remember. No. First Steps. Was it? No. That God. Maybe not. Was it that long ago that we did a microsode? It's been a little.
Maybe.
It's been a minute.
I can't remember the last time we. I did a microsode. I know I sat out of it, but I can't remember specifically what it is I missed. And I know I was bummed that I missed it, but I couldn't make it.
Yeah.
That's gonna drive me crazy.
I mean, we could just go to, like, you know, any one of our podcast feeds on any of our...
I could just grab my phone right now and I'm too lazy. Right?
Our preferred podcast platform and scroll back and see what it was. But anyway, too much work.
Yeah, listeners.
Too much work. Well, we are back. I'm being joined by, as you've already heard, BJ.
Hello.
And we've also got Eric here.
Hello.
Brian has not made it to a movie theater yet, so he is not joining us. And due to us being grown-ups with grown-up things going on in our lives, we could not make this work for everybody to have enough time to go to the theater and get this out in a timely fashion. Getting things out in a timely fashion, not something we've been known for lately, but... I'm trying to, you know, get us back on that track. But we are here with a microsode because a big-ass movie came out in the past couple of weeks.
A $2.5 billion movie came out.
It's up apparently to two and a half?
It's up to $2.5 billion now.
Jeez! When I went to see it, it was just barely crossing the $1 billion mark. After the first four days.
2.5 billion, baby.
Wow. Well, if you just happen to, maybe this episode started automatically and you didn't see what this was about. Because if you clicked on it, you didn't know what it's about.
Because that just crossed a billion. That beat Avatar. So it's the highest grossing IMAX movie now.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
It's higher than Avengers Endgame now, too.
Wow. Well, we are here to talk about Spider-Man Brand New Day, the fourth Spider-Man film starring the little British boy, Mr. Zendaya, if you will. Yeah.
Mr. Zendaya.
So we're going to talk about Spider-Man Brand New Day here. We're obviously going to spoil things. We don't normally give spoiler warnings, but fair game if you are listening to this. We are going to talk about the movie. We're going to talk about things that happen within the movie, where this could be going. We'll do it in our traditional things we liked, things that maybe didn't quite hit the button for us. We'll get Eric into this curling spiel. didn't land on the button. Was outside of the house. And then some wild conjecture and speculation that could be coming down the line for the MCU, Spider-Man, whatever we feel makes the most sense. So before we dive into the actual movie itself, here we go with the background, because, you know, maybe you don't know what this is about and you're listening to this anyway. So Spider-Man Brand New Day is a 2026 American superhero film based on the Marvel Comics character Spider-Man. Who fucking knew? It's produced by Columbia Pictures, Marvel Studios, and Pascal Pictures. Not Pedro Pascal Pictures, but maybe. And distributed by Sony Pictures Releasing. It is the 38th film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. God, I feel old now. Oh, the MCU. And the fourth film in the MCU Spider-Man film series following Spider-Man No Way Home in 2021. Which I can't believe it's been that long since No Way Home. It feels like no time has passed since then, and all of the time has passed since then. The film was directed by Destin Daniel Cretton, written by Chris McKenna and Eric Summers, and stars Tom Holland as Peter Parker, Spider-Man, alongside Zendaya, Sadie Sink, Jacob Batalion, John Bernthal, Florence Pugh, Trammell Tillman, Marissa Tomei, and Mark Ruffalo. In the film, Parker anonymously protects New York City as the hero Spider-Man and investigates a powerful new threat while his superpowers undergo a surprising and potentially dangerous evolution. Okay, so with all that out of the way, let's dive into the movie itself and what we thought. Eric, you've been the quietest so far on the podcast, so I'm going to go to you first. What are some things that this film did really well, hit out of the park, for you?
I liked Tom Holland's emotional portrayal of loner Spider-Man. Doesn't really have anybody except for... Another thing they did well was I liked his relationship with the police woman, chief, whatever her position was.
No, she's not the chief, but she's a... Detective Jean DeWolf, who eventually I think becomes Wraith in the comics. But yeah.
I really liked her being his, to throw to another superhero, Jim Gordon equivalent in that. So that way, hopefully the police stay off of him, but is helping, and yes, I like that. I like the playful banter between him and Punisher. I didn't watch the Punisher movie. Was there any reference to the Staten Island incident in that?
No. Honestly, I felt like Punisher One Last Kill and this. I know that they said that this is what connects Punisher to Spider-Man Brand New Day, and the only thing it did was give you, like, backstory into what he was doing and him being sad for an hour and then finally saying, okay, I'm going to be Punisher again, which...
Yeah, because obviously Spider-Man wasn't in that, but I wasn't sure if they somehow referenced it with, like, a newspaper clipping or whatever.
Not that I noticed. I also didn't watch the hour and a half New Rock Stars... Every hidden Easter egg and thing you may have missed video. Because it's an hour and a half. I'm just saying. The movie was what? Two hours and change?
It's almost the length of the movie.
The entire thing is an Easter egg.
I mean, there's a lot.
Yeah. I really liked... the acting was great across the board. I was going to say, and Zendaya's Mary Jane, and Ned, and I thought Yelena was a cute person to bring in for this. To kind of
she totally gave me BJ vibes when talking about the fan fiction and the graphic artwork.
He lost my shit. I'm not gonna lie. That Yelena, honestly, Yelena is like the MCU's version of what's that actress that everybody said was super down to earth back when she got big? She played Mystique. She was in the Hunger Games movies.
Oh, Jennifer Lawrence.
Lawrence. She gives me such Jennifer Lawrence vibes when she interacts with other characters in the MCU. She's just got a very, like, yeah, shit's fucking weird vibe. And I, every time she shows up now, I love her in everything she's in. The Russian sauna is her office.
I mean, sure.
I also, it's just a minor, smaller thing, but I really liked the way they portrayed Jean body hopping.
Interesting. I thought that was, okay.
Kind of evocative. And I saw a little behind the scenes things where they said they used dancers because they were able to easier choreograph to help our eye move and give it some vision.
That makes sense, because that definitely was like dancer movement. As soon as you said it, I'm like, okay, I could see that being easy for them to portray and act that way. I'll probably be talking about that a little later in the podcast. Spoiler alert, but...
But I don't want to steal everything, so what did you guys like about it?
BJ, I'll throw it to you. What are some of your key positive takeaways?
So here's the thing. I'm incredibly biased. Spider-Man is probably my all-time favorite comic book, all-time favorite superhero. I have been salivating at the bit for this portion of Peter Parker's Spider-Man journey, which is like living in a shitty apartment, like, you know, monitoring the police waves, you know, has his contacts. So just honestly, the setting, this is probably my favorite Spider-Man setting. You know, the city is like likes him, but he's completely ditched his life as Peter Parker, more or less. And he's just, and here's the thing that was shocking to me that I loved is the 4-year jump. It started with him like having to get his GED because the high school system probably, the spell probably wiped him from the high school records. It was him getting his GED, living in a shitty apartment, you know, had to make his own suit. So the setting to me is just like perfect Spider-Man material. I love the comic book cover montage of the different rogues. Because you had Tarantula, you had Ramrod, which is like a weird version of Hammerhead. You had Tombstone, Marvin Jones III. And I was like, holy shit, Tombstone's here. And it was just like a side piece. Same for Scorpion. Like, Scorpion was recurring, but like they didn't, the small times rogues, they didn't have to spend like an hour developing all of them, because they were just like, to quote Yelena, they're small potatoes. So you can really introduce them in like a cover style sort of like surprise. So I appreciated that. I have been loving the breadcrumbing they've been doing for the bad time mutants are about to have. They have been doing an amazing job, because the Department of, what is that? Department of
Damage Control
has been a fucking problem. Damage Control was a problem in Ms. Marvel with that racist ass bitch who was talking about the right people need to have powers. And then you had Ms. Marvel's friend created a device to be able to detect mutation. You've got Peter accidentally creating power dampeners, like wide spectrum.
Hated that so much. Oh,
you've got he. I mean, and granted, but that's how. But they established that the misuse of technology is what the fucking country's doing, because you've got Riri, who built a vibranium detector on a fucking dare, clearly so the university could steal her work and sell it to the government. So you've got the power broker. That storyline is still milling about somewhere in there. So you've got a power broker fucking in the U.S. government. So the department, the damage control. Oh, damage control is also what fucking screwed over Toomes in the first Spider-Man movie. That was the department that took his job away so he resorted to a life of fucking crime. Like, they have done such a good job.
Don't forget Wonder Man. That was the whole point of Wonder Man.
So, like, yeah, so they've done such a good job of actually breadcrumbing, like, all the little things that, like the issues mutants are about to have, and they've done such a good job. But, like, I will save the meat for that for you, but I will say that's how you fucking introduce an X-Men. I'm just saying. That's how you introduce one. Because you don't try to introduce five characters all at once in a movie. You, like, that, honestly... Like, they already took one of my top, like, two or three favorite X-Men. Sadie Sink knocked it out of the fucking park. And I'm a little... The only thing... I love how they did the other, too. This was kind of like a version of the other storyline. Same as with No Way Home was a version of One More Day, where Peter made everybody forget. He sold his soul to Mephisto to make everybody forget who he was, and he sacrificed his relationship with MJ to do it. But everybody hated that storyline, but the No Way Home was such a good movie. They actually took another storyline that people were kind of iffy on, where he, like, mutates, not Man-Spider, but it touched on Man-Spider and the other, and they kind of combined them in a way that I really, really, really liked. Because even in the comics, technically, Peter... His DNA is mutated, but he isn't a natural born mutant. So he's in a weird gray area as far as, like, mutants and everybody are concerned. Most people leave him alone and, like, they don't think he's a mutant. But, like, I like how they kind of converge that whole idea that, like, when somebody's going through mutation, stressing their body out can potentially cause that mutation to further evolve, which is what happened with Namor. His people took that herb to live in the water, but his childbirth was so traumatic, he mutated. So he's a mutant amongst his people. So I just love the breadcrumbing, and a lot of the breadcrumbing they've been doing came to a head in this movie. So honestly, just the setting, the writing, all kind of knocked it out of the park for me. So I'll pass it to you, Pat.
And he's considered a mutate, right? Because isn't that what they classify those in between, those other ones?
Who are mutated via external means instead of like Jean was clearly born with natural telepathy, and her sister was too. But Peter had the catalyst, like, there's a different catalyst other than your genetics.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, and I agree with you on the comic covers. I knew the Ramrod one, 'cause that was, I saw a video that mentioned that, or I saw a YouTube short or whatever that talked about it. But I obviously, was it Spider-Man 1 with, like, him swinging through the buildings and in that classic pose with the web and everything, those were just, it was great. Like, it was all fan service, but it was fan service in the best way possible. So for me, I thought the movie was great. I got spoiled before I went to see the movie. I was trying my damnedest not to get spoiled. And I swipe to the side of my phone and go to the Google Discover feed, and there is a Sadie Sink is Jean Grey, and I'm like, son of a bitch, not how I wanted to learn. I pretty much knew ahead of time, like, that was a thing, and I clicked on a different YouTube short that talked about Sarah, and I was just like, I clicked off it quickly, but I was like, I'm just gonna pretend I didn't see that. And then I saw it there. But as we all know, I am a Jean Grey girly. I'm a Phoenix girly. I am most of the Summers Clan girly. Most of the Lady Summerses. Whether it's, you know, little Madeline Pryor, whether it's Rachel, whether it's Jean, whether we're talking Havoc, you know, all of those things. Like those are my Summers peeps. But I am excited. She did a great job. I will get to the part that I will counter Eric on in the next segment here. But I thought it was great. I thought that she did a great job portraying just the overall, just the emotion behind it. It was so, there was such an intense emotion there. And I'm excited to see where they go with it. I will counter a little bit on you, BJ, and say that you could have the X-Men just show up in a movie. Like, there isn't really, like, the X-Men are popular enough across the board that I don't think it hurts. Plus, you have X-Men 97, you had X-Men the Animated Series. Was it Evolution? Is that the X-Men Evolution?
Yeah, X-Men Evolution was the one where they were like, you have the older X-Men and then you have the younger, like the younger class, which I feel like they're kind of, they might actually do something like that. But yeah, X-Men Evolution.
They're pretty young so far. With Kit Connors has been revealed as being brought on as Scott, but Samara Weaving is Emma Frost, or has been announced as being cast as Emma Frost. I feel like there's another one. Was it Adam Driver or Sebastian Shaw? I don't know if that's official. I saw that somewhere, but I haven't gotten real.
I think Adam Driver is attached, but they're not sure. They haven't announced officially who he's playing, but I think he's playing the main villain, and I think it's Mr. Sinister.
I would rather him be Shaw in my world. I think he would make a better Shaw. And if you do the Hellfire Club, I mean,
yeah,
I'm in. But great.
I think they're going to go the Mr. Sinister route first, and I think Magneto's going to be like a slow burn. I think they're going to take their time a little bit with that. But no, yeah, that Sadie Sink, that line delivery. The last thing she saw was this goddamn room. And like, here's the thing I love about the X-Men is like, at that point I was like, kill them all. Do it. Do it. He deserves it. Like, I'm sitting there, like, I saw the glass shards and I was like, you've got it now, girl. Do it. Just fucking do it. And I'm like, and then Peter shows up and I was like, no, Peter, I don't need the good. I need the survival.
Yeah. Overall, I think she did a great job. I think, honestly, the entire cast just did a great job. Frank, I'm not a huge Spider-Man person. I don't read a lot of the Spider-Man books, I haven't read a lot of the Spider-Man books. Not a big Punisher fan. It's just not my normal cup of tea. But I liked him in this. Punisher One Last Kill, I wasn't horrible. maybe that was the last microsode that we did was for One Last Kill. But Frank in this film, I think, worked really well. Him putting on the mask and hopping around in the window at the hospital was ridiculous in the best way possible.
Brought You're a little making bit the of, noises.
Yeah.
Just, let me tell you something about Berenthal. Oh my god, the thing, like, when he's having his like freak out in one of the Daredevil seasons and he's like in the chair and he's like no, wait. Something about his freak out sounds are the funniest shit to me. And like, especially when they went into the room and you could hear him making the random like gorilla noises, I was like, okay, this is the funny, like, I was in tears. That was so fucking funny to me. And it wasn't me laughing at the Punisher, it was me 1000% laughing at John Berenthal,
for sure. And I think it was in the I watched Pitch Meeting for this, and Ryan George makes a joke about about that, and that it's like a clause in John Berenthal's contracts in every movie that he has to like grunt and groan. And I'm like, But no, I overall, also, I think, well, yeah, no, no, you go.
Oh, no, but like even the whole thing with him. So the thing with him, with him hitting Peter with the sniper round, that was referenced in, it was one of the Ultimate Spider-Man comics where Peter, somebody, he, like, Punisher gets red-pilled by essentially Chameleon into thinking that, like, Captain America and, like, some of the Avengers are actually, like, deep state, like, fucking issues. And he goes out to assassinate Captain America. Peter's fucking fighting Dr. Octavius on the street. And he notices Punisher about to shoot Captain America. And he pushes Captain America out the way and gets hit. But then gets the call that Norman Osborn is about to fucking burn his house down and kill Aunt May. So he webs the wound shut and then goes and, like, beats Green Goblin. But he bleeds out in the process and technically dies. He's, like, gone for the majority of the rest of the Ultimate Spider-Man run. So that scene with Punisher, like, actually remorseful over shooting somebody, especially somebody he deemed, like, a good person, I really liked that section of their relationship. Because, and their relationship is very similar to the comics, where, like, Peter's like, fucking stop killing people, Frank. Like, he calls Frank by his first name. He's just like, go home. Like their interactions are very comic accurate throughout this movie. And I actually, because that's the only time I've ever liked Punisher, is when he's interacting with Peter.
Yeah, no, that was definitely fun. And to see him, the only way, with you talking about that, that's the only way that I see one last kill tying into Brand New Day, is that it showed how alone Frank is. And we've always known that, like, that's part of Punisher. If Punisher's family isn't killed, he's not the Punisher. Like, that's just a part of who that character is. So we already know it, but I guess seeing how damaged he is from it mentally, and then kind of picking up the pieces and moving forward to that conversation that he has with Peter on his boat, hideout, residence?
Dock. Well, it's like a dock area.
I'm like, but is he in a boat? I don't know. It looked boat-ish.
Yeah, he's in a boat that's dry docked.
Okay. He's dry docking with Peter? Good to know. Anyway, so when he has that conversation and talks about, like, about being alone, and, like, he wouldn't choose that if he could choose not to, like, that was the only piece where I was like, oh, okay, here's where these two pieces of media connect in that overall. But no, overall, thought it was a really well done movie. So before we get into wild conjecture and speculation, let's dive into the things that maybe didn't hit home for us. Let's go the other way around. BJ, were there any pieces of Spider-Man Brand New Day that didn't necessarily do it 100%?
Actually, for the first time, I think it was the soundtrack. Something about the other three movies, the sound, the engineering, the soundtrack and everything, This one felt like it actually concentrated more on the sound effects more than the soundtrack, which makes perfect sense, especially when you have a psychic character. Because I'm not going to lie. When I watched the newer X-Men movies with the younger Professor Xavier, him constantly touching his temples got to be a little bit much and a little comedic. So they definitely worked on the sound engineering when it came to Jean's to essentially her telepathy. And they definitely concentrated more on Peter's webbing, a lot of the sound effects involved with Frank. They concentrate more on each character's almost their own sound effects versus like any kind of real soundtrack. So it just wasn't as memorable to me as the other ones. It didn't take me out of the movie. I honestly, I can't even think about what the soundtrack for this movie sounded like. The only scene I remember what the soundtrack sounded like was when Jean was in the room and she was like, the last thing she saw was this room. And then she's like, the last thing she saw was this goddamn room. And then when she goes, the only person that gets to wield my power, and it goes incredibly silent, and she goes, is me. And the sound effect of her psychic like backlash going through the city, like that was super memorable. But like I couldn't even tell you what the soundtrack sounded like for the most of the movie. Other than that, really, for me, I think that's only because the other soundtracks for the other Tom Holland Spider-Man movies, and even the Amazing Spider-Man and the original Tobey Maguire Spider-Man, like, if I hear a couple of notes in the background, I immediately know Spider-Man's playing. So I think that was just the only thing, really, to me, that I was like, that could have been a little better. Other than that, I really have no complaints how the movie, I wish it was longer. that's been my chief complaint of a good movie. So,
okay. Eric, what about you? What was outside of the house for you?
I would say that the treatment of the hand in this movie, basically making them a group of orphans that Damage Control adopts and then turns them into guard dogs.
I feel like that should have been the first red flag, though, for Damage. That, like, if nobody noticed the red flags in all the other media, that I feel like is quite literally the loudest red flag, which does feel a little bit off. Amongst all the breadcrumbing issues, that one feels awkward, and like, and the fact that he acknowledged they're teenagers, like, you acknowledge they're underage, but you're hiring them to attack people. Wait, what? So yeah,
they just had no agency of their own, because it was either the Damage Control guy just sending them wherever, or Jean controlling them. You know, they were just nothing.
They were a reference for people who watch Daredevil. That's good.
But I still feel like in Daredevil there was some personality to the clan of the Hand versus just generic group of ninja.
Yeah, and especially with the Spider-Man movie where they have a giant rogues, which Peter has a rogues gallery that's just regular people, like Alistair Smythe is just a regular guy that just makes anti superhero weapons. Like, they could have easily had him like build something, to counteract Spider-Man. Like, it was pretty simple. They could have just introduced some like side, like they could even have the Tinkerer come back and build like some anti-Spider-Man weapons.
I mean, they did have Damage Control inventing anti-Spider-Man weapons with the guns in the fight where he couldn't use his mechanical web slingers anymore because they had analyzed his webbing and found a way to counteract that. That was about it. I mean, I like pretty much everything else.
Okay.
Yeah.
So for, I know
you have a bit more to say.
For me, so BJ, you mentioned it, and I get that telepathy is very difficult to showcase in a cool way. I was not a fan of Jean's hopping for an Omega level mutant. And I get it. She doesn't figured out all of her powers. She obviously, you know, leveled up her powers during, you know, during this movie. It just felt awkward to me. Like, loving Jean Grey so much, I'm like, that's not what the bitch do. What is this? And the and including Sarah was an interesting choice. I haven't read the Phoenix solo series because I know they brought Sarah back in that comic because Sarah has been dead for a while. But she apparently isn't. And she was in space and Jean found her and it was a whole thing. And I did not read that. I did not read that arc. So I don't know what they did with her, but obviously there was a plan. Like, let's reintroduce Jean's sister because she's going to have a sister in this movie. That's going to be a part of why she's doing what she's doing. So I didn't love that. Did I hate it? Did it make me go, oh my God, this movie is horrible? No. Did it hit 100% for me? No. I just, you know, I didn't love it. I didn't, it wasn't what I don't know. It wasn't, it just didn't do it for me in that way. The, I'm sad that they potentially are going to have the inhibitor technology be made by Peter Parker. Like that just, as soon as he made that chip, I was like, that's fucking inhibitor tech. Like that's, Genosha, I mean, that's
warned by Bruce Banner not to do it.
Yeah. Right. And Bruce warned him that because Bruce understands that the government is fucking shit. Like, let's be clear. Bruce understands you don't trust the fucking government. Peter, and this is this honestly, with Tom Holland's Peter, this is the issue with Peter being by himself. He develops the bad habits that fucking Tony Stark does. But that's the thing is, MJ and Ned ground him in a way. MJ would have immediately, like, had he gone out, found MJ, talked to them, hung out with them, become friends with them again, which is essentially what he started building again with them. MJ would have immediately been like, yeah, make sure make sure that doesn't fall in the hands of the fucking government. Because they will use that to fucking subjugate everybody, especially people with powers. So because Peter didn't have those other voices with him, like warning him, and he's just on his own, not like thinking about things. He's just responding to every crisis. No, you're right. He accidentally created a massive fucking problem. And again, he's been working with the police, like, Nothing against Detective DeWolf. She's a good, she seems like a good cop. She's great. She likes working with him. But again, she ain't damage control. Damage control is the problem. And I guarantee you they're going to become the MRD. They're going to 1,000,000% going to be the head of the MRD. Coming up here. So, but yeah, no, I get what you're saying. Like, it's kind of sad to see the superhero effectively be the, not really the bad guy, but definitely create something that's highly fucking problematic.
Yeah, the catalyst for bad shit to happen later on. But overall, I thought it was a good movie. I'm sure there are some other little things that I could think of if I really dug hard enough, but overall I think that was my biggest thing is I wish that Jean's power would have been shown a little bit differently, but I also would have loved, and this is less of a things that didn't hit for me, but I wish it happened, is when they show Jean on the bus at the end, that it would have had, like, they would have shot from outside and you would have seen like Westchester on the front of the bus. Like, that would have been just like the little right on the you know, cherry on top for all of that and tie into, you know, Xavier School for Gifted Youngsters and all of that. But can't always get what we want. All right. Speaking of Xavier School for Gifted Youngsters and what is coming next, let's do a quick round of wild conjecture and speculation. Where do we see these characters going, or what does this lead into for Doomsday and Secret Wars? Because we've got that coming up, you know, in the Doomsday, at least in the next couple of months. Eric, what do you think?
Well, Spider-Man's obviously going to space because the spider tracker told us so.
Is he, or is a spider something coming to us?
Ooh. I mean, we already had Multiverse Spider-Man. I don't know if we can do that again.
They said Tobey Maguire is appearing in Doomsday and Secret Wars.
I don't know. I think Peter's going to end up going wherever everyone else goes, to quote unquote Battle World or whatever it's going to be. I don't know. It's weird with Ned having the muscle memory of the handshake and instantly going, Peter. Yeah, I don't know if it's going to be flipping a switch and he's back to knowing Peter or what. That's tough. So hopefully it takes at least another movie before they're back to being best friends and him and MJ are back together. I don't want to see an instant come back to status quo. But it's tough with movies and you're only getting them like every 3 or 4 years, you know, to move things along. So.
Yeah.
But I don't know too much other than that. It just kind of depends on what happens in Doomsday.
Okay.
To really know what's going to happen.
DJ, what do you got for wild speculation and conjecture?
So I think the way they ended off with Ned, and especially with MJ, because she was sitting at their spot on the roof of the high school at the end of the movie, and she was she still has the Black Dahlia broken necklace thing, and she kind of smiled. So I think they're going to get some of their memories back. Like, I think they're going to remember who Peter is, but I don't think they're going to get back, like, all their direct memories. So I think they'll remember that, like, oh, we went to school with you. Like, they'll remember basic stuff, but they won't have the exact memories, because I really love the idea of him just going back to be friends with them, just to have people in his life. Like, I really loved when he was just hanging out as Spider-Man, and him and Ned immediately started, like, doing the voices, talking about their favorite movies, doing the Lego thing. Even MJ was like, y'all seem like best friends. So I feel like that'll loosen the spell a little bit. So I'm just going to conjecture about post Secret Wars and everything. If we get a Spider-Man movie after that, I think if we get another Spider-Man movie, it's going to be Public Enemy number one, Spider-Man. I feel like he's going to get blamed for Jean running away. I believe we're going to be introduced to the Spider Slayers, and, we could potentially be introduced with, Damage Control hiring some of his enemies. Scorpion, Tombs, like hiring a bunch of people, maybe like a faux Sinister Six or like a proto Sinister Six, or them hiring a consultant like Norman Osborn or somebody to create weapons to take down superpowered vigilantes. So I could see a bunch of really, but I would love to see a Public Enemy number one Spider-Man story with him actually, with MJ and Ned trying to like vie and help him. I could see MJ taking a job at Damage Control to monitor them and potentially sabotage them. I could see a lot of really interesting, fun things to do with the supporting cast now that they're quote unquote back. So I would just like to see Spider-Man Public Enemy number one. And I'm just excited to see Spider-Man in Secret Wars and Doomsday. Any Spider-Man content, Secret Wars and Doomsday, will be a welcome choice.
Do you think Doom will reveal his face at all and Peter's going to freak out?
I hope they don't. I hope they don't reveal Doom's face, because one, that would be fucking hilarious for all of the people that are like excited that RDJ took over as Dr. Doom. I was not excited about it, but hearing the voice he's using and everything, I'm actually very intrigued. But I think it would be great if they never showed his face, or they showed his face, but it's just completely disfigured, like it always is. And it's less about the fact that RDJ is playing him, and more the fact that this is a completely other new character. This isn't a variant of Tony Stark. I just would really like it if they never really actually show his face. And I think it would actually hurt the movie more, or hurt what they're trying to do with Dr. Doom, if they did show his face to look just like Tony Stark's.
Yeah, because a lot of people would try to redeem him in that case. They'd be
Tony Stark's he can be the new Iron Man. Screw that black girl. Like, so that's exactly what would happen. Because the first thing that happened when they showed the daughter.
I don't mean the public at large. I mean,
you mean the public in the movie? You mean the characters?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, since they're bringing back Steve Rogers, like, I don't know, I feel like the nostalgia would damage what they're planning on doing. In all honesty, I feel like that's giving in to too much nostalgia. And it could really make the movie not great. Like, it could mar it in a way. So I think they need to keep Doom as a separate thing, especially if they plan on using him post Secret Wars for anything. I think they should just keep him behind the mask. Let RDJ flex his acting skills, and work on it that way.
All right, my turn. So, real quick, the only wild conjecture and speculation, I will say one that I thought and then one that I heard, two that I heard as possible things. One that I read somewhere, but saw somewhere, is that the main guy from Damage Control being Mr. Sinister. Because of his genetic, his obsession with genetics and gene, or the gray line, at least for right now, wouldn't be opposed to that. Would be pretty interested to see, how that developed. And again, I still think that Adam Driver as Sebastian Shaw would be a lot more fun. Post-credit scene speculation. My initial thing was, well, the incursion's coming. Or you know, about to happen, Miles. We get Miles's planet being one of the three that's part of this incursion, which in the comics was only two at a time. I don't remember there being three at any given point, but hey, that's the movies. So that was my initial, was like, ooh, this could be a way to introduce Miles Morales. I know that we've name dropped Miles with Shocker two movies ago. Last movie, two movies ago, whatever.
It was Prowler.
Prowler, not
Donald
Tucker.
Donald, yeah. Glover mentioned he had a nephew.
Yeah. And I think he name dropped him as Miles in the film. So like that was my initial, was like, ooh, could be Miles. And then I saw something, maybe it was New Rockstar, because I've seen a couple of the clips from that hour and a half video. That it's the symbiote. I forget what we've finished, where we ended up on pronunciation for it. Symbiote, as it was, I think, in the original Venom movie. But that's...
Because Sony wanted this movie to be a symbiote movie with Null as the villain.
Yeah,
and,
well...
Spider-Man coming back and a huge thing.
So maybe that's what it is. I don't know. I'm just excited to see what happens next, and you know I love me some mutants, so I'm hopeful for all of that, and maybe actual good representations. And I still stand by the fact that that was a Rogue Easter egg in the bus as he was going through and just wearing the Jets shirt, jersey, being green and white, having the hair, like it all just, it all screamed Rogue, but who knows? Who knows?
We will be finding out possibly the entire cast of the X-Men movie, potentially this Friday, at D23, Disney's like convention. So by the time this episode drops, probably, we should know, who the cast potentially will be.
Well, same day, because episodes go out first thing in the morning. So if you're listening to this Friday morning, you may not know yet, but check out D23 and there may be some more answers there. And we'll see where we are. We'll see if there was those speculations were accurate. Well, before we wrap up, let's do a quick round of flame ratings. Eric, flame rating out of 5 for Brand New Day.
I wish I knew what I gave No Way Home, but 4.5.
BJ?
5 out of 5, baby.
All right. I was going to go 4.25. I'll go 4.5. I think I don't know. I don't know why I don't want to give it higher, but it overall, very good movie. Thought it was good. Thought it was very good. But yeah. Appreciate you guys joining me for this little chit-chat about Spider-Man Brand New Day. Listeners, thank you for joining us on this adventure. Let us know what you thought about Spider-Man Brand New Day. Email us, comment us, send a carrier pigeon, whatever makes the most sense for you. We'll be back in a couple weeks with our monthly pop culture roundup. Until next time, flame off!